Finally, he said, "There's Hugo Amaril." A dim spark seemed to light Nee's eyes. "Who?" "Hugo Amaril," said Rach eagerly. "He works for my foster father at the university." "He a Dalite, too? Everyone at the university Dalites?" "Just he and I. He was a heatsinker." "What's he doing at the university?" "My father took him out of the heatsinks 8 years ago." "Well, I'll send someone." Rach had to wait. Even if he escaped, where would he go in the intricate alleyways of Billy Button without being picked up instantly? 20 minutes passed before Nee returned with the corporal who had arrested Rach in the first place. Rach felt a little hope. The corporal, at least, might conceivably have some brains. The corporal said, "Who is this Dalite you know?" "Hugo Amaril, Corporal, a heatsinker whom my father found here in Dahl 8 years ago and took to Streeling University with him." "Why did he do that?" "My father thought Hugo could do more important things than heatsink, Corporal."
"Like what?"
"Mathematics. He..."
The corporal held up his hand.
"What heatsink did he work in?"
Rach thought for a moment.
"I was only a kid then, but it was at C2, I think."
"Close enough. C3.
"Then you know about him, Corporal?"
"Not personally, but the story is famous in the heatsinks, and I've worked there too. And maybe that's how you've heard of it. Have you any evidence that you really know Hugo Amaril?"
"Look, let me tell you what I'd like to do. I'm going to write down my name on a piece of paper and my father's name. Then I'm going to write down one word. Get in touch, any way you want, with some official in Mr. Joronoom's group. Mr. Joronoom will be here in Dahl tomorrow. And just read him my name, my father's name, and the one word. If nothing happens, then I'll stay here till I rot, I suppose, but I don't think that'll happen. In fact, I'm sure that they will get me out of here in 3 seconds, and that you'll get a promotion for passing along the information. If you refuse to do this, when they find out I'm here, and they will, you will be in the deepest possible trouble. After all, if you know that Hugo Amaril went off with a big-shot mathematician, just tell yourself that same big-shot mathematician is my father. His name is Harry Selden." The corporal's face showed clearly that the name was not unknown to him. He said, "What's the one word you're going to write down?" "Psychohistory."
The corporal frowned.
"What's that?"
"That doesn't matter. Just pass it along and see what happens." The corporal handed him a small sheet of paper torn out of a notebook.
"All right, write it down, and we'll see what happens."
Rach realized that he was trembling. He wanted very much to know what would happen. It depended entirely on who it was that the corporal would talk to, and what magic the word would carry with it.
Chapter 17.
Harry Selden watched the raindrops form on the wraparound windows of the Imperial ground car, and a sense of nostalgia stabbed at him unbearably. It was only the second time in his 8 years on Trantor that he had been ordered to visit the Emperor in the only open land on the planet, and both times the weather had been bad. The first time, shortly after he had arrived on Trantor, the bad weather had merely irritated him. He had found no novelty in it. His homeworld of Helicon had its share of storms, after all, particularly in the area where he had been brought up. But now he had lived for 8 years in make-believe weather, in which storms consisted of computerized cloudiness at random intervals, with regular light rains during the sleeping hours. Raging winds were replaced by zephyrs, and there were no extremes of heat and cold, merely little changes that made you unzip the front of your shirt once in a while or throw on a light jacket. And he had heard complaints about even so mild a deviation. But now, Harry was seeing real rain coming down drearily from a cold sky, and he had not seen such a thing in years. And he loved it, that was the thing. It reminded him of Helicon, of his youth, of relatively carefree days. And he wondered if he might persuade the driver to take the long way to the palace. Impossible. The Emperor wanted to see him, and it was a long enough trip by ground car, even if one went in a straight line with no interfering traffic. The Emperor, of course, would not wait. It was a different Cleon from the one Selden had seen 8 years before. He had put on about 10 pounds, and there was a sulkiness about his face. Yet the skin around his eyes and cheeks looked pinched, and Harry recognized the results of one too many micro-adjustments. In a way, Selden felt sorry for Cleon. For all his might and imperial sway, the Emperor was powerless against the passage of time. Once again, Cleon met Harry Selden alone, in the same lavishly furnished room of their first encounter. As was the custom, Selden waited to be addressed. After briefly assessing Selden's appearance, the Emperor said in an ordinary voice, "Glad to see you, Professor. Let us dispense with formalities, as we did on the former occasion on which I met you." "Yes, sire," said Selden stiffly. It was not always safe to be informal, merely because the Emperor ordered you to be so in an effusive moment. Cleon gestured imperceptibly, and at once the room came alive with automation, as the table set itself and dishes began to appear. Selden, confused, could not follow the details. The Emperor said casually, "You will dine with me, Selden?" It had the formal intonation of a question, but the force, somehow, of an order. "I would be honored, sire," said Selden. He looked around cautiously. He knew very well that one did not, or at any rate should not, ask questions of the Emperor, but he saw no way out of it. He said rather quietly, trying to make it not sound like a question, "The First Minister will not dine with us?"
"He will not," said Cleon. "He has other tasks at this moment, and I wish in any case to speak to you privately."
They ate quietly for a while, Cleon gazing at him fixedly, and Selden smiling tentatively. Cleon had no reputation for cruelty, or even for irresponsibility. But he could, in theory, have Selden arrested on some vague charge, and if the Emperor wished to exert his influence, the case might never come to trial. It was always best to avoid notice, and at the moment Selden couldn't manage it. Surely it had been worse 8 years ago, when he had been brought to the palace under armed guard. This fact did not make Selden feel relieved, however. Then Cleon spoke.
"Selden," he said, "the First Minister is of great use to me, yet I feel that at times people may think I do not have a mind of my own. Do you think that?"
"Never, sire," said Selden calmly. "No use protesting too much."
"I don't believe you. However, I do have a mind of my own. And I recall that when you first came to Trentor, you had this psychohistory thing you were playing with."
"I'm sure you also remember, sire," said Selden softly, "that I explained at the time it was a mathematical theory without practical application."
"So you said, Do you still say so?
Yes, sire.
Have you been working on it since?
On occasion I toy with it, but it comes to nothing. Chaos unfortunately interferes, and predictability is not... The Emperor interrupted.
There is a specific problem I wish you to tackle. Do help yourself to the dessert, Selden. It is very good.
What is the problem, sire?
This man, Joranum. Demerzel tells me, oh so politely, that I cannot arrest this man, and I cannot use armed force to crush his followers. He says it will simply make the situation worse.
If the First Minister says so, I presume it is so.
But I do not want this man Joranum. At any rate, I will not be his puppet. Demerzel does nothing.
I am sure that he is doing what he can, sire.
If he is working to alleviate the problem, he certainly is not keeping me informed.
That may be, sire, out of a natural desire to keep you above the fray. The First Minister may feel that if Joranum should...
If he should... take over,
said Cleon, with a tone of infinite distaste.
Yes, sire. It would not be wise to have it appear that you were personally opposed to him. You must remain untouched for the sake of the stability of the Empire. I would much rather assure the stability of the Empire without Joranum. What do you suggest, Selden?
I, sire?
You, Selden, said Cleon impatiently. Let me say that I don't believe you when you say that psychohistory is just a game. Demerzel stays friendly with you. Do you think I am such an idiot as not to know that? He expects something from you. He expects psychohistory from you, and since I am no fool, I expect it too.
Selden, are you for Joranum? The truth. No, sire, I am not for him. I consider him an utter danger to the Empire.
Very well, I believe you. You stopped a potential Joranumite riot at your university grounds single-handedly, I understand.
It was pure impulse on my part, sire.
Tell that to fools, not to me. You had it worked out by psychohistory.
Sire!
Don't protest. What are you doing about Joranum? You must be doing something if you are on the side of the Empire.
Sire, said Selden cautiously, uncertain as to how much the Emperor knew, I have sent my son to meet with Joranum in the Dahl sector.
Why?
My son is a Dahlite, and shrewd. He may discover something of use to us.
May?
Only may, sire.
You'll keep me informed?
Yes, sire.
And Selden, do not tell me that psychohistory is just a game, that it does not exist. I do not want to hear that. I expect you to do something about Joranum. What it might be, I can't say, but you must do something. I will not have it otherwise. You may go.
Selden returned to Streeling University in a far darker mood than when he had left. Cleon had sounded as though he would not accept failure. It all depended on Rache now.
Chapter 18.
Rache sat in the anteroom of a public building in Dahl, into which he had never ventured, never could have ventured as a ragamuffin youth. He felt, in all truth, a little uneasy about it now, as though he were trespassing. He tried to look calm, trustworthy, lovable. Dad had told him that this was a quality he carried around with him, but he had never been conscious of it. If it came about naturally, he would probably spoil it by trying too hard to seem to be what he really was. He tried relaxing while keeping an eye on the official who was manipulating a computer at the desk. The official was not a Dalite. He was, in fact, Gambol Dean Namarty, who had been with Joranum at the meeting with Dad that Rach had attended. Every once in a while, Namarty would look up from his desk and glance at Rach with a hostile glare. This Namarty wasn't buying Rach's lovability. Rach could see that. Rach did not try to meet Namarty's hostility with a friendly smile. It would have seemed too artificial. He simply waited. He had gotten this far. If Joranum arrived as he was expected to, Rach would have a chance to speak to him. Joranum did arrive, sweeping in, smiling his public smile of warmth and confidence. Namarty's hand came up, and Joranum stopped. They spoke together in low voices while Rach watched intently, and tried in vain to seem as if he wasn't. It seemed plain to Rach that Namarty was arguing against the meeting, and Rach bridled a bit at that. Then Joranum looked at Rach, smiled, and pushed Namarty to one side. It occurred to Rach that while Namarty was the brains of the team, it was Joranum who clearly had the charisma. Joranum strode toward him and held out a plump, slightly moist hand. "Well, well, Professor Selden's young man, how are you?"
"Fine, thank you, sir."
"You had some trouble getting here, I understand."
"Not too much, sir."
"And you've come with a message from your father, I trust. I hope he is reconsidering his decision and has decided to join me in my great crusade."
"I don't think so, sir."
Joranum frowned slightly. "Are you here without his knowledge?"
"No, sir. He sent me."
"I see. Are you hungry, lad?"
"Not at the moment, sir."
"Then would you mind if I eat? I don't get much time for the ordinary amenities of life," he said, smiling broadly.
"It's all right with me, sir."
Together they moved to a table and sat down. Joranum unwrapped a sandwich and took a bite. His voice slightly muffled, he said, "And why did he send you, son?" Rach shrugged.
"I think he thought I might find out something about you that he could use against you. He's heart and soul with First Minister Demerzel."
"And you're not?"
"No, sir. I'm a Dalite."
"I know you are, Mr. Selden, but what does that mean?"
"It means I'm oppressed, so I'm on your side, and I want to help you. Of course, I wouldn't want my father to know."
"There's no reason he should know. How do you propose to help me?" He glanced quickly at Namarty, who was leaning against his desk, listening, with his arms folded and his expression lowering. "Do you know anything about psychohistory?"
"No, sir. My father don't talk to me about that. And if he did, I wouldn't get it. I don't think he's getting anywhere with that stuff."
"Are you sure?"
"Sure, I'm sure. There's a guy there, Hugo Amaril, also a Dalite, who talks about it sometimes. I'm sure nothing is happening."
"Ah. And can I see Hugo Amaril sometime, do you suppose?"
"I don't think so. He ain't much for Demerzel, but he's all for my father. He wouldn't cross him."
"But you would?"
Rach looked unhappy, and he muttered stubbornly, "I'm a Dalite."
Joranum cleared his throat. "Then let me ask you again, how do you propose to help me, young man?"
"I've got something to tell you that maybe you won't believe."
Indeed? Try me. If I don't believe it, I will tell you so.
It's about First Minister Ato Demerzel.
Well? Rach looked around uneasily.
Can anyone hear me?
Just Namarti and myself.
All right, then listen. This guy Demerzel ain't a guy. He's a robot.
What? Exploded Joranum. Rach felt moved to explain.
A robot is a mechanical man, sir. He ain't human. He's a machine.
Namarti broke out passionately.
Jojo, don't believe that. It's ridiculous.
But Joranum held up an admonitory hand. His eyes were gleaming. Why do you say that?
My father was in Mycogen once. He told me all about it. In Mycogen, they talk about robots a lot.
Yes, I know. At least, I have heard so.
The Mycogenians believe that robots were once very common among their ancestors, but they were wiped out.
Namarti's eyes narrowed.
But what makes you think that Demerzel is a robot? From what little I have heard of these fantasies, robots are made out of metal, aren't they?
That's so, said Rach earnestly.
But what I heard is that there were a few robots that looked just like human beings, and they live forever.
Namarti shook his head violently.
Legends. Ridiculous legends. Jojo, why are we listening?
But Joranum cut him off quickly. No, GD, I want to listen. I've heard these legends, too.
But it's nonsense, Jojo.
Don't be in such a rush to say nonsense. And even if it were, people live and die by nonsense. It's not what is so much as what people think is. Tell me, young man, putting legends to one side, what makes you think Demerzel is a robot? Let's suppose that robots exist. What is it then about Demerzel that makes you say he is a robot? Did he tell you so?
No, sir, said Rach.
Did your father tell you so? Asked Joranum.
No, sir. It's just my own idea, but I'm sure of it.
Why? What makes you so sure?
It's just something about him. He doesn't change. He doesn't get older. He doesn't show emotions. Something about him looks like he's made of metal.
Joranum sat back in his chair and looked at Rach for an extended time. It was almost possible to hear his thoughts buzzing. Finally, he said, Suppose he is a robot, young man. Why should you care? Does it matter to you?
Of course it matters to me, said Rach. I'm a human being. I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire.
Joranum turned to Namarti with a gesture of eager approval. Do you hear that, GD? I'm a human being. I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire. Put him on holovision and have him say it. Have him repeat it over and over till it's drummed into every person on Trantor.
Hey, said Rach, finally catching his breath. I can't say that on holovision. I can't let my father find out.
No, of course not, said Joranum quickly. We couldn't allow that. We'll just use the words. We'll find some other Dalite, someone from each of the sectors, each in his own dialect, but always the same message. I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire.
Namarti said, And what happens when Demerzel proves he's not a robot?
Really, said Joranum, how will he do that? It would be impossible for him to do so, psychologically impossible. What? The great Demerzel, the power behind the throne, the man who has twitched the strings attached to Cleon the First all these years, and those attached to Cleon's father before him? Will he climb down now and whine to the public that he is too a human being? That would be almost as destructive to him as being a robot. GD, we have the villain in a no-win situation, and we owe it all to this fine young man here.
Rach flushed.
Joronoom said, Rach is your name, isn't it? Once our party is in a position to do so, we won't forget. Dahl will be treated well, and you will have a good position with us. You're going to be Dahl's sector leader someday, Rach, and you're not going to regret you've done this, are you now?
Not on your life, said Rach fervently.
In that case, we'll see that you get back to your father. You let him know that we intend him no harm, that we value him greatly. You can tell him you found that out in any way you please. And if you find anything else you think we might be able to use, about psychohistory in particular, you let us know.
You bet.
But do you mean it when you say you'll see to it that Dahl gets some breaks?
Absolutely. Equality of sectors, my boy. Equality of worlds. We'll have a new empire with all the old villainies of privilege and inequality wiped out.
And Rach nodded his head vigorously.
That's what I want.
Chapter 19. Cleon, Emperor of the Galaxy, was walking hurriedly through the arcade that led from his private quarters in the small palace to the offices of the rather tremendous staff that lived in the various annexes of the Imperial Palace, which served as the nerve center of the Empire. Several of his personal attachés walked after him, with looks of the deepest concern on their faces. The Emperor did not walk to others. He summoned them, and they came to him. If he did walk, he never showed signs of haste or emotional trauma. How could he? He was the Emperor, and as such, far more a symbol of all the worlds than a human being. Yet now he seemed to be a human being. He motioned everyone aside with an impatient wave of his right hand. In his left hand, he held a gleaming hologram.
The First Minister, he said in an almost strangled voice, not at all like the carefully cultivated tones he had painstakingly assumed along with the throne. Where is he?
And all the high functionaries who were in his way fumbled and gasped and found it impossible to manage coherence. He brushed past them angrily, making them all feel undoubtedly as though they were living through a waking nightmare. Finally, he burst into Demerzel's private office, panting slightly, and shouted, literally shouted,
Demerzel!
Demerzel looked up with a trace of surprise and rose smoothly to his feet, for one did not sit in the presence of the Emperor unless specifically invited to. Sire, he said. And the Emperor slammed the hologram down on Demerzel's desk and said,
What is this? Will you tell me that?
Demerzel looked at what the Emperor had given him. It was a beautiful hologram, sharp and alive. One could almost hear the little boy, perhaps 10 years old, speaking the words that were included in the caption. I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire. Demerzel said quietly, Sire, I have received this too.
And who else has?
I am under the impression, sire, that it is a flyer that is being widely spread over Trentor.
Yes,
And do you see the person at whom that brat is looking?
He tapped his imperial forefinger at it.
Isn't that you?
The resemblance is striking, sire.
Am I wrong in supposing that the whole intent of this flyer, as you call it, is to accuse you of being a robot?
That does seem to be its intention, sire.
And stop me if I'm wrong, but aren't robots the legendary mechanical human beings one finds in thrillers and children's stories?
The Mycogenians have it as an article of faith, sire, that robots...
I'm not interested in the Mycogenians and their articles of faith. Why are they accusing you of being a robot?
Merely a metaphorical point, I'm sure, sire. They wish to portray me as a man of no heart, whose views are the conscienceless calculations of a machine.
That's too subtle, Demerzel. I'm no fool.
He tapped the hologram again.
They're trying to make people believe you are really a robot.
We can scarcely prevent it, sire, if people choose to believe that.
We cannot afford it. It detracts from the dignity of your office. Worse than that, it detracts from the dignity of the Emperor. The implication is that I would choose as my first minister a mechanical man. That is impossible to endure. See here, Demerzel, aren't there laws that forbid the denigration of public officers of the Empire?
Yes, there are, and quite severe ones, sire, dating back to the great law codes of Abaramis.
And to denigrate the Emperor himself is a capital offense, is it not?
Death is the punishment, sire. Yes.
Well, this not only denigrates you, it denigrates me. And whoever did it should be executed forthwith. It was this Joranum, of course, who is behind it.
Undoubtedly, sire, but proving it might be rather difficult.
Nonsense. I have proof enough. I want an execution.
The trouble is, sire, that the laws of denigration are virtually never enforced, not in this century, certainly.
And that is why society is becoming so unstable, and the Empire is being shaken to its roots. The laws are still in the books, so enforce them.
Demerzel said, "Consider, sire, if that would be wise. It would make you appear to be a tyrant and a despot. Your rule has been a most successful one through kindness and mildness."
"Yes, and see where that got me. Let's have them fear me for a change rather than love me in this fashion."
"I strongly recommend that you do not do so, sire. It may be the spark that will start a rebellion."
"What would you do then? Go before the people and say, 'Look at me, I am no robot'?"
"No, sire, for as you say, that would destroy my dignity, and worse yet, yours."
"Then..."
"I am not certain, sire. I have not yet thought it through."
"Not yet thought it through? Get in touch with Selden."
"Sire..."
"What is so difficult to understand about my order? Get in touch with Selden."
"You wish me to summon him to the palace, sire?"
"No, there's no time for that. I presume you can set up a sealed communication line between us that cannot be tapped."
"Certainly, sire."
"Then do so, now."
Chapter 20. Selden lacked Demerzel's self-possession, being, as he was, only flesh and blood. The summons to his office, and the sudden faint glow and tingle of the scrambler field, was indication enough that something unusual was taking place. He had spoken by sealed lines before, but never to the full extent of imperial security. He expected some government official to clear the way for Demerzel himself. Considering the slowly mounting tumult of the robot flyer, he could expect nothing less. But he did not expect anything more either, and when the image of the Emperor himself, with the faint glitter of the scramble field outlining him, stepped into his office, so to speak, Selden fell back in his seat, mouth wide open, and could make only ineffectual attempts to rise. Cleon motioned him impatiently to keep his seat.
"You must know what's going on, Selden."
"Do you mean about the robot flyer, sire?"
"That's exactly what I mean. What's to be done?"
Selden, despite the permission to remain seated, finally rose. "There's more, sire. Juranum is organizing rallies all over Trantor on the robot issue. At least, that's what I hear on the newscasts."
"It hasn't reached me yet. Of course not. Why should the Emperor know what is going on?"
"It is not for the Emperor to be concerned, sire. I'm sure that the First Minister..."
"The First Minister will do nothing, not even keep me informed. I turn to you and your psycho-history. Tell me what to do."
"Sire?"
"I'm not going to play your game, Selden. You've been working on psycho-history for 8 years. The First Minister tells me I must not take legal action against Juranum. What then do I do?"
Selden stuttered.
"Sire, nothing." "You have nothing to tell me?"
"No, sire, that is not what I mean. I mean you must do nothing. Nothing. The First Minister is quite right if he tells you that you must not take legal action. It will make things worse."
"Very well. What will make things better?"
"For you to do nothing. For the First Minister to do nothing. For the government to allow Juranum to do just as he pleases."
"How will that help?"
And Selden said, trying to suppress the note of desperation in his voice, "That will soon be seen." The Emperor seemed to deflate suddenly, as though all the anger and indignation had been drawn out of him. He said,
"Ah, I understand. You have the situation well in hand."
"Sire, I have not said that."
"You need not say, 'I have heard enough.' You have the situation well in hand, but I want results. I still have the Imperial Guard and the armed forces. They will be loyal. And if it comes to actual disorders, I will not hesitate. But I will give you your chance first."
His image flashed out, and Selden sat there, simply staring at the empty space where the image had been. Ever since the first unhappy moment when he had mentioned psychohistory at the decennial convention 8 years before, he had had to face the fact that he didn't have what he had incautiously talked about. All he had was the wild ghost of some thoughts, and what Hugo Amaril called intuition. Chapter 21. In 2 days, Juranum had swept Trantor, partly by himself, mostly through his lieutenants. As Harry muttered to Dors, it was a campaign that had all the marks of military efficiency. "He was born to be a war admiral in the old days," he said. "He's wasted on politics." And Dors said,
"Wasted? At this rate, he's going to make himself First Minister in a week. And if he wishes, Emperor in 2 weeks. There are reports that some of the military garrisons are cheering him."
Selden shook his head. "It will collapse, Dors."
What? Joranum's party or the Empire?
Joranum's party. The story of the robot has created an instant stir, especially with the effective use of that flyer. But a little thought, a little coolness, and the public will see it for the ridiculous accusation it is.
But, Harry, said Doris tightly, you needn't pretend with me. It is not a ridiculous story. How could Joranum possibly have found out that Demerzel is a robot?
Oh, that. Why, Rach told him so.
Rach?
That's right. He did his job perfectly and got back safely with the promise of being made Dahl's sector leader someday. Of course he was believed. I knew he would be.
You mean you told Rach that Demerzel was a robot and had him pass on the news to Joranum?
Doris looked utterly horrified.
No, I couldn't do that. You know I couldn't tell Rach, or anyone, that Demerzel was a robot.
I told Rach as firmly as I could that Demerzel was not a robot. And even that much was difficult. But I did ask him to tell Joranum that he was. He is under the firm impression that he lied to Joranum.
But why, Harry? Why?
It's not psychohistory, I'll tell you that. Don't you join the Emperor in thinking I'm a magician. I just wanted Joranum to believe that Demerzel was a robot. He's a Mycogenian by birth, so he was filled from youth with his culture's tales of robots. Therefore, he was predisposed to believe, and he was convinced that the public would believe with him.
Well, won't they?
Not really. After the initial shock is over, they will realize that it's madcap fiction, or they will think so. I've persuaded Demerzel that he must give a talk on subetheric holovision to be broadcast to key portions of the Empire and to every sector on Trantor. He is to talk about everything but the robot issue. There are enough crises, we all know, to fill such a talk. People will listen and will hear nothing about robots. Then, at the end, he will be asked about the flyer, and he need not answer a word. He need only laugh.
Laugh? I've never known Demerzel to laugh. He almost never smiles.
This time, Doris, he'll laugh. It is the one thing that no one ever visualizes a robot doing. You've seen robots in holographic fantasies, haven't you? They're always pictured as literal-minded, unemotional, inhuman. That's what people are sure to expect. So Demerzel need merely laugh. And on top of that, do you remember Sun Master 14, the religious leader of Mycogen?
Of course I do. Literal-minded, unemotional, inhuman.
He's never laughed either.
And he won't this time.